Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. Your future is important. Take time to plan for what can go right. Talk to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
There is a palpable police presence in major cities across China today and in the last 24 hours, more so than usual. The increasing security presence follows weekend protests when thousands took to the streets calling for an end to COVID lockdowns. Some even demanded the resignation of President Xi. So will we see further protests, and just why has China persisted with its zero COVID policy? For analysis, I'm joined by Kiri Paramore, who's Professor of Asian Studies at University College Cork. Professor Paramore, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thanks, Cormac.
Now, it's extremely unusual, isn't it, to see any type of protest on the streets of any city in China, but they have come back big time with the security presence here.
Yeah, but the protests were incredible because they were spread across all of China. So it's the first time they've been protests at a national level, maybe since the 1970s, since the Great Cultural Revolution. So you had places where it all started in Urumqi in the far west of China, and then all across the eastern seaboard, the big industrial cities like Shanghai and Guangzhou. And these are places separated by 4,000 kilometres. And you had people of different ethnicities, different backgrounds, different social groups using the same slogans, making the same demand. So it was a pretty amazing event.
And why do you think it happened now?
I think like a lot of places, I mean, we experienced anti-lockdown protests and the sort of zero COVID policy has been in place for a very long time now. And people in places like Shanghai, you know, which is a very wealthy, developed place with a lot of overseas connections, or did have a lot of overseas connections, people there have been complaining to me. Like, I have a lot of friends there. They've been complaining for over a year, you know. Mm-hmm. People have... It's very difficult for people to live their lives. You know, the way that lockdowns are done there is they're done at a localized level. You might remember the county lockdowns we had. Well, imagine if you had blocks of flats locked down. So your block of flat might be locked down, or the block you live in the city might be locked down. And that will happen within minutes of somebody in your block of flats or the theater you were in getting a positive test. So I've had very close friends who, for instance, hear a rumor that their flats are about to be locked down, their block of flats, and they grab, you know, a pair of underpants and go running out into the street and run to a cafe so that they don't get locked down, find out three hours later that there was no lockdown, their whole day's ruined, and people are just living that kind of life.
For how long now?
For years, since the pandemic began.
Was there a particular tipping point? I read about an apartment fire.
Yeah, so because areas are locked down like that and they're very small areas, often they'll put, you know, security guards around, say, a block of flats. And in Urumqi, right out in the west of China, there was a block of flats that was isolated and there was a fire in that block of flats. Now, what exactly happened is a bone of contention. There's different arguments. But what people came to understand or felt is that those people, 10 people, died in that fire as a result of not being allowed out because they were locked down. And that was the trigger for what then spread across all of China, these mm-hmm. protests across all of China.
The protests in themselves are incredible. I was in Beijing many years ago, about 10 years ago now, and we had a tour guide. I was just visiting the place. And the tour guide, when he said anything political, lowered his voice. And this was in the middle of a street and very far away from any guards or police. And it just struck me at the time how oppressive and seemingly dangerous the regime was if you even spoke out of place. Now, to see these protests in it is something to behold, with blank white pieces of paper as well, Kiri. What do they signify?
Yeah, that was one of these very interesting tactics that the protesters used. You know, so that they wouldn't be censored. Remember, a lot of the information moves through social media and they use algorithms to pick out keywords. Well, a blank sheet of paper, you can't pick out any keywords through an algorithm, so it's impossible to censor it. And because everybody knows, I mean, like I said, I've got friends in Shanghai, I've been complaining about this for well over a year, so everybody knows what the complaint is, what the issue is. Just hold up a blank of A4 paper. And there was a meme going around on Chinese social media where somebody had created a parody of a state paper company making an announcement, "We're sorry, we will no longer, in the interest of social stability, we will no longer be able to print or produce A4 pieces of white paper." So there's also this sort of comedy, this, you know, this this festival of getting around the rules, as it were. So, yeah, very, very interesting.
It is very interesting. And it begs the question as well, and I know it's I don't know how, if you just describe it as an oppressive regime, I suppose you would. But why have they persisted with such a stringent lockdown for so long? Is it that it simply suits them politically?
A lot of things that are difficult to understand about China come down to the disparity of wealth in the country. It's a massive country, 1.4 billion people. Some cities like Shanghai are some of the richest cities in the world. You know, they look like London. They look a lot fancier than London or New York in many ways. And then you've got areas in the center of the country that are really, really, really poor. You know, and there's not much health service. People really struggle. And quite a lot of the population still do live in these very, very big, you know, the majority of the population still live in these areas. So whereas people in Shanghai might be happy to take the risk, pay for private hospital and so on, the people out in these other areas are faced with a different situation, and the government of China has to somehow navigate a policy that works for all these people. And the choice that Xi Jinping makes in a lot of situations, you know, be it in terms of freedom of the press or right to protest, or be it in relation to the COVID pandemic, is he decides to take the more, well, what he would see as an egalitarian path, if you like, right? So to protect those people. I mean, it is true there's been only a bit over 5,000 deaths in China. And in the United States, of course, there are 1 million deaths. Now, if you had deaths at even a quarter of the rate that you had in the United States in China, that would be over a million people. So it is a conundrum. It is certainly a conundrum, a difficult situation that they're in.
Perhaps closer to the focus of the center of power in Beijing is the damage it would do to them as an economic superpower. And I don't know if we're to believe this or not, that the vaccination rate in large tracts of China are quite low. So would that explain, I wonder, why President Xi Jinping has gone for a more oppressive lockdown regime?
There's two reasons. One is, you're right, the vaccination rates are particularly low among elderly people, which is a problem, obviously. And the second thing is, Xi Jinping and the government in general has used their, you know, inverted commas, success fighting COVID, where it is a success, you know, to date, and has really used this to spur national pride and so forth. So if they did, you know, I mean, every country that has eased lockdown, even Ireland, we have a significant spike when that happens, and unfortunately a lot of people do pass away. If that happens in China, then that political claim and all this political capital that's been invested in, look how good we are compared to America, look how many people died in America, that argument doesn't work anymore, or certainly doesn't work so well. So that is a sort of link between the politics of Xi Jinping's government and the pandemic problem.
Can I ask you as well, finally, Kiri, how annoyed will President Xi be about calls for his resignation?
Yeah, you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to do that. So, I mean, that's interesting. I mean, it was amazing that there were. I mean, that wasn't a major part of the protest, but there were incidents in protests where people said things like "down with the Communist Party," which is almost unthinkable. But you know, most of the protesters, and you can see this if you look at videos of what they're chanting. Like, there was one case I saw in Shanghai where people are chanting, you know, "We demand freedom. We demand democracy." And when they come to the democracy bit, sort of, virtually nobody really joins in. And when they come to the second part about freedom, everybody is very, very strong. So it's fairly clear that the protests are primarily about the zero COVID policy and the lack of individual movement, individual freedom, sort of daily liberty. That's where the focus is. And a lot of sociological research about young Chinese people shows they're actually very nationalist. You know, that sort of nationalism and you know wolf warrior diplomacy that Xi Jinping pushed, they like that. But they also like their freedom a lot too, and they want that individual freedom, and that seems to be the core.
Now that they've got a taste for the freedoms, maybe Western freedoms and commercialism and all that goes with it, they want more of it. It's a difficult balancing act for the regime in China. Fascinating to talk to you and hear your analysis, Professor Kiri Paramore. Thank you very much indeed for that.